Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The recall of the Boeing 737 MAX 8 and MAX 9 planes is just a day old, but there are still a lot of questions about safety and what took so long. Are you safe when flying the skies, and what can be done to replace retiring flight mechanics? Well, my guests are retired United Airlines pilot Captain Ross Amer of Aerial Consulting and Marion Cohen, Executive Director of the Aviation Institute of Maintenance. Thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Harold. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. Captain,
thank you, Harold.
Thank you so much. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 10 Certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Captain, let me start with you. Why did it take so long for the United States, the FAA specifically, to ground the 737 MAX 8 and MAX 9?
Well, I think the simple answer would be the business controls everything in the United States, even sometimes safety, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. With that being the case, we had a very, very quick grounding, first by Ethiopian Airlines, and then we saw some of the other Middle Asian companies doing a grounding, and then we had the Europeans doing so. Do you think that Canada was the linchpin for the United States, or was there something else?
Well, the last standing were Canada and U.S. Throughout the history, aviation history, that is, everyone always looked up to what we did, and the FAA. Our FAA was basically the leader in anything that had to do with aviation. In this particular case, as we saw, We followed the rest of the world, the last man basically standing.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't we have been the first, since these were this was planes from an American company?
Absolutely.
Why would you think so?
Well, like you said, we're the one that made this aircraft. FAA has certified it initially, and they're the ones that have to take the lead. In aviation, we have a saying that if you ever err, you err to the side of caution. And if there was any doubt in anybody's mind within Boeing, within FAA, they should have stepped forward and say, let's just take a break. Let's just ground these airplanes and make sure there's nothing wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
When you have two brand new designs or redesigns in the case of a 737 crash within a few months of each other and in under very similar circumstances, you immediately have to step in and do something.
Mm-hmm. Marion, your thoughts on this? It's been reported that late last year there was a rather contentious meeting between pilots and Boeing corporate about the so-called software upgrade and not getting enough information about these new planes. Your thoughts about that? Is there a disconnect between corporate and those that are on the front lines of safety, including, for example, pilots?
Well, certainly I'm not an expert or a subject matter expert on the safety or piloting a plane. My expertise is training the next generation of aviation maintenance technicians who will be working on aircraft. I can tell you that within our school, which is a very large company that has over 10 campuses that are stretched all across the country, we educate about 20% of all aviation maintenance technicians in the country. And we work closely, hand in hand, with the FAA. Our curriculum is based on the FAA rules and regulations, and one of the main things that we absolutely instill in our students from day one is safety.
Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you agree that more information instead of less is important?
You know, it depends on circumstances, but I really can't comment on the Boeing 737 because I'm not an expert mm-hmm. in that. As I said, my expertise is more in the educational aspects of aviation and making sure that we have enough aviation maintenance technicians out there to keep our planes flying.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about safety in the skies in the wake of the recall of the Boeing 737 MAX 8 and MAX 9. Do you feel safe? Do you have any concerns? Or do you feel perhaps better that the FAA and indeed the United States has finally moved on grounding these planes that are dealing with a questionable safety record? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Captain, is it possible, and you spent many years as a pilot, for anybody who is any passenger who may be safety conscious, is it possible before you, on the day that you perhaps get on a plane, to know about the flight history or flight reputation of any given pilot that may be piloting your plane? Or is that too much to ask for in such a short period of time?
Yeah, to look into the history of a single pilot, It's extremely hard for a passenger to do. I couldn't tell you how we can ever do something like that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But most pilots obviously go through a rigorous background check, and especially in the U.S., they're trained, they're qualified. We don't have a problem as such with pilot confidence in this country.
Mm-hmm. Would you be able to know how fresh your pilot happened to be on any given day? I mean, obviously, if you have the first flight of the day and the plane's been parked overnight, it's pretty likely that you will have a pilot who is fresh off of a good night's sleep. Is that safe to assume?
It is safe to assume. We follow guidelines set forth by FAA in terms of our sleep patterns and rest periods. They follow very strict rules. Mm-hmm. However, any individual may not be able to follow those things. You know, we all have had bad nights where you couldn't sleep, mm-hmm. and sometimes we spent nights in noisy hotels and extensive, that's a very touchy subject when it comes to, but it's individual pilots' responsibility to be as fit as they are to show up for work.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, let's say, in the middle of the afternoon? Is it more or less likely that you may have a pilot who has had enough sleep or not enough sleep, for example?
Yes, it is definitely possible because, you go through rest periods that could be different in 1 week. One night you could fly all-nighters. The next day you fly, during the day. And so that varies with the type of flying you do, with your seniority. It has a lot of variables. But again, like I said, most professional pilots make sure to get enough rest, and if they're not rested, they now have immunity to actually call in fatigued, what we call call in fatigue, and they're protected by federal rules.
Interesting. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about safety in the skies in the wake of the Boeing 737 MAX 8 and MAX 9 grounding, just a day old now. If you have a comment or question about your concerns, if you have any about safety in the skies, give us a call. As you know, we do have Marion Cohen here with the Aviation Institute of Maintenance. In your experience, Captain Aymer, do you believe that, you know, there needs to be more, a constant addition of maintenance crews and I guess the refreshing of new blood, even as we see more, retiring and moving on in this business?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, I'd like to thank your guest, Marion, for what she's doing, because I am one of those young boys that was trained as an A&P mechanic at the age of 18, and I started with the airlines before I was a pilot. So I appreciate a good mechanic, and they're essential to the safety of the flight as much as a pilot is. Having a good mechanic that knows the system and knows how to fix the airplane is essential to the safety, to air safety.
Captain, I think you would agree with me that most people don't realize the strenuous and arduous testing that goes on in becoming an FAA-certified airframe and power plant mechanic, or what we call now as the aviation maintenance technicians. They go through the FAA curriculum, and then they have to sit for three different tests. One is a general test about flight and aviation. The other is about power plant, which is the mechanical components of the aircraft, and then airframe, which is the outer shell of the aircraft. And once that's done, then you have to sit for your oral and practicals, which could be anywhere from a day to 3 days before you even are given an FAA certification or allowed to even touch an aircraft.
Captain?
Certainly. You're absolutely correct, because I, too, have gone through that pain and agony of being certified as an A&P mechanic. And then I'm sure you know this better than anybody else. That certificate is really nothing yet, because then you get picked up by an airline or a company that takes care of airplanes, and you go through another set of rigorous training for that particular type of airplane or whatever you're working on. People really don't appreciate what an aircraft mechanic or technician does. And like I said, they're just as important as the pilot or the CEO of the airline or anybody else that comes into contact with that aircraft.
I would say, though, as a passenger, while I'm glad they're there, they're the last people I want to see if I'm sitting on an airplane, working on a plane that I need to fly in. And, you know, so I think, you know, from a passenger's perspective, let us hope that we just never have to see them shaking their head around the wheels of a plane. I need to take a break, but I want to thank Captain Ross Aymer for sharing his expertise with us. And I'm so glad that you were able to spend some time with us. So, Captain Aymer, thank you so much.
My pleasure, sir.
Absolutely. Need to take a break. When we come back, more of this conversation about airline mechanics, what it takes, and the fact that we need more of them. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm continues on WHUR, but this conversation continues on Sirius XM. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about safety in the skies as well as what needs to be done to replace retiring flight mechanics. My guest is Marion Cohen. She is the Executive Director of the Aviation Institute of Maintenance. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me grab this phone call real quick. Junior calling from York, Pennsylvania. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. What's the difference with this particular generation of aircraft? Is the seating longer? I think there's with the 800 series and the 900 series or the Mac 8 or Mac 9. What's the difference between those particular 737s and with the generation that they replaced?
I don't know if you are able to at least discuss a little bit of that.
Well, I, like I said, I'm not an expert in that particular area. All I've heard is what I've heard on television, is that the reconfiguration may have had something to do with the engines and where their engine placements are.
Mm-hmm. Were you talking about leg room, Junior?
Of course I am.
Well, never enough.
Well, I can tell you, having been on a Max 8, and having flown first class, there's a lot of leg room up front, but I can't tell you what's going on in the back. So I apologize for that. But certainly we do know that these are the newest and arguably the most advanced passenger aircraft that Boeing has designed, the Max 8, Max 9, and there is there has been, I think, discussion about a possible Max 10 as well. But as far as the actual design, not much qualified to answer that question. But Keith,
the captain would know that.
Yeah, unfortunately, we had to let him go at 7:30. So unfortunately, I don't have an expert still on the line to address that. But thank you for your call. Nevertheless, I want to talk a little bit, Marion, about not only the school, but also what is the charge of the school as it relates to the industry filling the spaces for flight mechanics?
You know, Harold, I wake up every morning and I go to a job that I absolutely love. And I love it because I'm changing lives. I really think this is probably being an A&P mechanic or going to an A&P mechanic school or technical college is something that most people don't think about. And it is a wonderful career path that can lead you and your family to financial stability. Because as long as there's a plane in the sky, guess what? There needs to be a mechanic underneath that plane when it's down and needing repairs. Our mission is to take men and women who have the desire to work really hard and be dedicated in learning this type of craft, which is aircraft maintenance, because the number one thing that we teach every day is safety. Safety, safety, safety. Because if something goes wrong with an aircraft, you cannot pull alongside a cloud. It's not like a car. This is a machine that there is no room for error. It has to be right. And so what we do is take our students through a very vigorous program of 22 months that is FAA sanctioned. We're an accredited school, and teach them the skills. And most of my instructors have anywhere from 25 to 30 years of experience of working on aircraft. So these are the men and women who have been in the trenches, who are now teaching the next generation on what they need to do. We're not in a place right now where we don't have enough mechanics. We have enough, but the problem is those mechanics who most were born in the baby boom era are now getting older and retiring. And so I applaud the airlines, the commercial airlines, who have realized this. And many of them have partnered with us to get a pipeline. So we have enough men and women who are learning this technical vocation, and then we can get them into the aviation maintenance positions.
What are the prerequisites and the qualifications for getting your start going to the school? I mean, you know, before you step through the doors, pick up a book or open up an iPad or study your first anything, mm-hmm. what is required?
Well, you know, when people are interested, we have them come into the school and we have them talk to the director of admissions and we give a tour and we have a hangar. We actually have a hangar, and we have aircraft that you actually work on. Our recent acquisition is a Learjet that we had flown in and we, towed it down the street to our campus. You have to have a high school diploma or equivalency. You need to be proficient in English. You need to be able to communicate well. If you have hands-on experience or enjoy that, that's always a plus. We have people who've been in the Army who have done aircraft maintenance before, down to someone who's just gotten out of high school and they want to learn.
But this is what I'm asking. To the example that you just used, this is not going to the Chevy dealer and saying, I just graduated from mechanic school. I want to work on cars.
Right.
This is a whole different ball game.
Yes.
And so talk to me about, you know, kind of the intellectual dexterity that one needs to have. And which is not to say that, you know, car mechanics are not intelligent, but like, or not concerned about safety, for example. But we're talking about airplanes here.
Well, I think the difference that most people, the flying public, doesn't realize, even when an AMP gets that certification from the FAA, they're not going to be turned out and just work on an aircraft by themselves. There's not an airline that I know would do that. They have to work alongside those seasoned mechanics who have been there forever. And that's why it's so important for our school to be able to provide those next level mechanics to work with those seasoned mechanics before they retire. So it's a very, stringent, very, dedicated, technical vocational school and career that they've chosen. So some of the things, you have to be proficient in English. You have to be able to communicate well. Certainly if you have good math skills, calculus, those type of things always help. But even if you have problems with those type of subjects, we go to the extent of having tutors that can help you. Because if this is something you really want to do, our school will take every step we can to help you to get there, because mm-hmm. we're all about changing lives. And I got to tell you, I am a widow of an AMP mechanic, and that mechanic, because he chose that certificate, it allowed me to go back to school. It allowed me to get my master's. It allowed me to do things that I never would have done before. It gave our family financial security. And I wish every day that so many people would just hear about this vocation and what it can do to change your lives. People don't realize when they look up in the sky, they think of the pilot and the flight attendant, but they don't think about the mechanic that had to get that plane airworthy and up in the sky.
One of the things that comes to mind, again, when we're talking about, there's no such thing really as a, you know, compared to a human body, a small aircraft. I mean, you know, even the smallest aircraft, they're relatively large machines. But let's take, for example, the concerns that we've been talking about over the past 24 hours, a 737 or 747, 777, MD-80, I've done a lot of flying. Not all mechanics, I would imagine, are created equal. Do they know about everything, or do you have specialists that work on landing gear, others that may work on fuel systems, others that may work on other things, or do they just learn the whole shebang?
When you come to our school, you are learning the basics of flight and elements of flight, the power plant of the aircraft, the airframe.
When you say power plant, what do you mean?
The engine.
The engines, okay.
Those type of things. When you then go out into your career and you are considered an entry-level mechanic, it depends on the airlines that you have been hired onto. If it's a bigger airline, they may have specific shops that just deal with landing gear or avionics. And avionics is really the brain of the aircraft. It's the computer that tells the aircraft what to do. So they may be separate. If you have a smaller, like general aviation, like corporate jets, everything may be under one hangar, under one roof. But I can tell you that there's not an airline out there that's going to let an entry-level mechanic just be out there by themselves.
No, and I understand that. I'm talking about the education itself. What I'm asking is, for example, in the school, does everybody learn about turboprops?
Or
does everybody learn about jet engines?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you don't have the turboprop side and you don't have the jet engine side.
No, no, no. It is full. Everybody learns the same thing. So their first four blocks, we call them blocks, they're 5 weeks in each block, and they learn about general aviation, the art of flight. After that, they learn airframe, and everybody learns about airframe. We do composites.
Airframe meaning how air flows over the wings and tail?
No, it's the skin of the aircraft.
The skin of the plane, okay.
Right. And so you're doing composites, composite damage repair, because most aircraft now are really going towards composites versus your metal type.
Right. Yeah.
So we're teaching those things. We're keeping up with the way that the aviation world is changing. So do we. And so then you go into power plant, which is the engine part of it. And so we have reciprocating engines there that...
Now, what is a reciprocating engine?
It's the engines that you would see on aircraft, usually a little bit bigger than what you'd see in a car.
Okay.
And they have fans and fan blades and things like that. And so the students have to learn about each component within that engine, because when they take their oral and practical, that's what that is. A instructor that's deemed by the FAA is going to take that student out there and he's going to say, I need you to change that tire on that landing gear. And you have to go through the process of doing it. So it's an oral and practical. So you really need to know what you're doing when you're there. You know, we have FAA test and quiz. We have structures that you have to get to certain levels to be able to test. And so it's very outlined in what needs to be done to be able to become an AMP mechanic.
One of the things that I find curious, and again, this has to do with the changing technology on airplanes. How does the school keep up? Because, for example, obviously we, you know, there have been questions about software for the 737 MAX 8, MAX 9, discussions about a possible MAX 10. Even the president was tweeting about modern aircraft being much more complicated than they were when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the latest thing comes out and they're not just putting one airplane at Reagan National, you're going to have 20 of the latest at Reagan National and 20 of the latest at BWI and 15 of the latest at Dulles and LaGuardia. And your students are going to come out and certainly obviously working with veteran staff. But how do you teach the latest thing as it relates to modern avionics?
So we are teaching them the basics.
Mm-hmm.
This is the basic ability to be an entry-level mechanic. And when they go out, say, I don't know, Southwest or American or wherever, and maybe they're flying the Airbus 320, that airline is then going to take that entry-level mechanic and take him to the next level and teach them exactly what needs to be done on their craft, on that aircraft, that specific aircraft. So each commercial airlines, whatever they're flying, they're constantly giving their mechanics additional training on, you know, the newest and greatest. And one of the things that we did in our school is that we, put a lot of money into avionics, because that's where it's going. And so we have a brand new avionics lab, and we also invested in having every student with a laptop, because now a lot of the larger airlines, they have laptops for their AMP mechanics. And as soon as that mechanic goes through the threshold into that airplane, that laptop tells them what's going on with that aircraft. Mm-hmm. So we're using that technology that they're going to see out in the field.
I need to take a break. When I come back, you don't have a lost luggage class because Lord knows we need one of the, I'm just kidding. I'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about aviation mechanics. I have some more questions for Ms. Cohen about the thing everybody wants to know about. How much do you get paid for these jobs? That more on the other side of this break. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation with Marion Cohen, Executive Director of the Aviation Institute of Maintenance, as we are talking about airline maintenance and mechanics. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So Marion, if I wanted to attend this school, how much is it going to cost me?
Well, you know, we're going to have you come in and we're going to give you a great tour and see what you're getting for your tuition, which if you look at cost benefit, you really do get a lot. It's in the 40s, and it's a 22-month program, and then you get out and you get your certification, start your career. You know, salary ranges can be anywhere. Entry level, we're seeing now $19 to $22 an hour. Not uncommon for someone who's worked really hard in 7 years to make six figures, but, you know, you do have to do your due diligence. You know, there's third shift work, there's working in the rain, there's working on Christmas and New Year's and those things. But, you know, my husband, who had been the AMP mechanic, he was able to help start an airline that's flying around here now. He was the third person that they ever hired. And that took him really to the pinnacle of his career. And he was able to break that glass ceiling and get that six-figure salary.
Is it hard to get a job in this business as a mechanic?
Absolutely not. It is, you know, it's funny. I had a commercial airline called us last week and said, we need 250 mechanics yesterday. Mm-hmm. So what's happened is the supply and demand. So as the demand goes up and we're trying to get to the supply, that also means that salaries are going up. So there are places, whether you want to be in general aviation, which is corporate jets, or you want to be in commercial aviations like your United or Delta or things like that, there are jobs out there.
250 sounds like a lot. Why so many? You said you got a phone call. 250 aviation mechanics sounds like a lot. Why so many?
Well, sometimes when aircraft are flying so many hours, they have to do what they call a C-check or a D-check, and that's a heavy maintenance. And they basically take that aircraft in and tear it down, every ounce of it, every seat, every wire, and then they put it all back together with new. And so sometimes the airlines will get a large amount of mechanics to come and help with that type of project.
You said the company that owns the school is very large. So say any graduate, I would imagine you're in this area, you're in Manassas, Virginia, but I would imagine that you kind of being mobile would mm-hmm. not be a disadvantage for a student.
No.
Or a graduate, I should say.
You know, there are jobs everywhere. I mean, if you want to go to the Northeast or if you want to go to the South, and you don't necessarily have to always work on aircraft. You could be one like my husband who went to Brazil, and he was the lead purchaser for Embraer aircraft to put into revenue for a large commercial aircraft company. Mm-hmm. So there are other things that you can do besides just working on aircraft. You can become an aviation maintenance. You can help design. You can build engines. GE has a very large facility now in the Midwest where they're building engines. So there's all kinds of things that you can do that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to turn a wrench.
Hearing from your graduates, what is the recurring thing that you think has surprised them the most during the course of their career as they ventured out?
You know, it's I love my job because I get to hear the success stories. I get to see men and women who had gone maybe through high school and thought they just didn't know their way. They didn't know what they wanted to do. They may have been told that they're never going to do anything. And they come to our school and we give them this incredible education for a technical vocational position as an A&P mechanic. And to see them go out into the field and start working on aircraft, aircraft that they know somebody's grandma, somebody's mama, somebody's child is going to be flying on and understand safety. One of our great success stories is I had a young man who had come from El Salvador. He went into the military, got out of the military. He came to our school, got his certification, and now he's working on the Falcon X or the SpaceX rocket ship that goes up periodically. So it's exciting when they come back to the school and they say, Miss Marion, guess where I'm working? Mm-hmm. But we also help them get positions. We have a career services department, and that's what we do. We help them with resumes. We help them with mock interviews. We stay connected with the aviation community. We have people from United, Southwest, American, Delta that come in and talk to our students about what is expected to be an A&P mechanic. We have a PAC group, which is our professional advisory committee. We meet twice a year and they go over our curriculum. They look at our equipment to make sure that everything is what we need to get our men and women trained and out in the field.
What do you think putting on your thinking cap and looking into your crystal ball, so to speak, what do you believe is going to be the future for aviation mechanics as the world becomes more intertwined, more interconnected, and more technically complex as it relates to this job?
I think the good thing is millennials are very computer savvy. And that's where technology is really going. There's a lot of avionics or that brain or that computer part of aircrafts. So with that, they have a hands up. So I see that being something that's going to just expand. I think the sky's the limit, actually.
No pun intended.
No pun intended, no. You caught that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
But you know,
probably
they
have
said
that
it,
on your wall.
I do.
Yeah, I know. I knew it. I tell you, I'm sharp. Please
but
continue.
In 10 years, we're going to need another 200,000 A&P mechanics globally. And the number for pilots is about the same because we've got the baby boomers who are retiring and we need that next generation to be able to come in and replace them. So the outlook for getting a position as an A&P mechanic is very good. Mm-hmm. We never guarantee that we're going to find you a job, but I tell you, as the director of the school, I will do everything I can to make sure you have what you need to succeed.
You know, Captain Amer said he started as a mechanic mm-hmm. and went on to be a pilot. Is that common?
It can be. Not as common as I see. Most of the time, students come in and they don't have any aviation per se experience unless they've been into the military, but that doesn't matter because we can still train you. But we have had a few pilots who have either started as an A&P mechanic and then they got their pilot's license. So that's not uncommon.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the mechanics think they want to stay on the ground.
Yeah. Yes.
Look, I want to thank you so much for coming in, Marion Cohen, and chatting with us about an industry that a lot of people just don't know about. And indeed, you know, all jokes aside, maybe we will think again, not only about, you know, thanking, you know, the pilots that get us, you know, to and fro safely, but those mechanics that are really at the forefront of our safety when we fly those friendly and sometimes not so friendly skies. So.
Well, we at the Aviation Institute of Maintenance in Manassas, we'd love for anyone to come by, take a tour, see what we do. because we really have some unsung heroes there that are going to be A&P mechanics to keep us flying and safe.
Absolutely. I'm still working on that baggage claim stuff, though. Marion Cohen, thank you so much. I appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, March 14th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.